Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 10, Deliverance of the Yamala Arjuna Trees, and we'll just read the translation for text 11. While alive, does his body belong to its employer, to the self, to the father, the mother, or the mother's father? Does it belong to the person who takes it away by force, to the slave master who purchases it, or to the sons who burn it in the fire? Or if the body is not burned, does it belong to the dogs who eat it? Among many possible claimants. Who is the rightful claimant? Not to ascertain this, but instead to maintain the body by sinful activities is not good. Text 12. Evam sadaranam deham avyakta prabha vapyayam kovid vidvan atmasad kritva hanti jantu rite sataha. Evam, in this way, sadaranam, common property, deham, the body, avyakta, from the unmanifested nature, prabhava, manifested in that way, apyayam, and again merged with the unmanifested. For dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou thy return. Shalt thou return. Shalt. Shall. So it's the old way of saying shall. You. You. Like two. T to, it's the old way of saying, it's the familiar way of saying you.
Okay, no, finally.
Ka, who is that person? Vidvan, one who is actually in knowledge. Atmasat kritva, claiming as his own. Hanti, kills. Jantu, poor animals. Rite, accept. Asataha, rascals who have no knowledge, no clear understanding. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. This body, after all, is produced by the unmanifested nature, and again annihilated and merged in the natural elements. Therefore, it is a common property of everyone. Under the circumstances, who but a rascal claims this property as his own, and while maintaining it, commits such sinful activities as killing animals just to satisfy his whims? Lest one is a rascal, one cannot commit such sinful activities. Purport. Atheists do not believe in the existence of the soul. Nonetheless, unless one is very cruel, why should one kill animals unnecessarily? The body is a manifestation of a combination of matter. In the beginning it was nothing, but a combination of matter. Has come into existence. Then again, when the combination is dismantled, the body will no longer exist. In the beginning it was nothing, and in the end it will be nothing. Why then should one commit sinful activities when it is manifested? It is not possible for anyone to do this unless he is a rascal, number one. The translation. This body, after all, is produced by the unmanifested nature, and again annihilated and merged in the natural elements. Therefore, it is the common property of everyone. Under the circumstances, Who but a rascal claims this property as his own? And while maintaining it, commits such sinful activities as killing animals just to satisfy his whims. Unless one is a rascal, one cannot commit such sinful activities. Throughout Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is asking questions about controlling his mind. So Arjuna says that to control the mind, dusprana analena cha, that Arjuna vacha yoyam yoga swaya prokta samyena manusudana etasyaham napashami chanchaladvasitim stiram chanchalam himana krishna pramati bralavadridam tasyaham nigraham manye vayor iva sadhuskriram. This system of yoga, which you have summarized, appears to be unendurable, difficult and unendurable, for the mind is restless and unsteady. If the mind is restless and unsteady, and to subdue it, it seems to be more difficult than trying to control the raging wind. In other words, the question is, what is our direction in life? The soul, being a soul, we have to be directed by someone. We just don't exist in nothingness. So we have to figure out how to become directed. Now the mind and the senses, they're always ready to redirect us somehow. If we're not eating or sleeping, then we're mating and defending. In other words, either we're active in eating and mating and defending, or we go to sleep. We got to do something. And there are different varieties of activities. There's activities which are, in the future, we hope to make a nice arrangement for eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And the other thing is protection. We're trying to protect what we have so we can nicely eat, sleep, mate, and defend. But at the end of the story, what we're doing is to eat, sleep, mate, and defend. It is not bad to eat, sleep, mate, or defend, but that's not the whole purpose of life. To eat, sleep, mate, and defend in this lifetime, and then to do the same thing life after life, without any other higher goal of life. So the question is, are we going to be directed by the mind of what we're doing, or are we going to add, hopefully, intelligence, but not intelligence, simply how to improve our eating, sleeping, mating, defending. How to organize in such a way is that it becomes more, we have two things. One of them is we try to make things more, let's see this, the goal, we should know what the goal is, not simply how to perform the goal. What are those two words?
Pariyojana?
No, that's certainly, we have this answer. The goal is pariyojana, and how to perform that is abhideya. And for that we need sambandha. But we're not trying to just become more, what is the word for organized, rather than, we can do things very in a very organized way. We should do things for the proper goal, though. In other words, we can organize our lives very nicely so we get everything done, but we should know what we're trying to get done, what the purpose is. So therefore, sambandha is necessary, what the purpose is, so that when we act efficiently, so there's efficiency, and then we are effective in actually trying to accomplish something. Most people are interested more in efficiency, how to get things done more. But they're not really effective. They don't know what they're trying to really accomplish. Maybe they're trying to accomplish getting money, but what's the money for? To spend it on things. And what do you spend it on? Generally for sense gratification, either personally or extended. But even without being very efficient, you can grab something and eat it. So at the end of the story, when you're completely efficient for eating, sleeping, mating, defending, you're no better, still no better than an animal. For instance, one may rob a bank very efficiently. And the idea is to get the money from the bank. Or you can steal a cucumber. At the end of the day, they're both thieves. One is a very scientific, efficient thief. The other is not so scientific. But with all that money he may get from the bank, he's going to have to buy a cucumber anyhow. So there's not so much difference. Some kind of a cucumber is to eat. So we should be effective. We should know what we're trying to accomplish. And the mind seeks a goal, a purpose. And if the goal is temporary, then the mind will never be peaceful, because even though we may be crazy and foolish, we know that this is not the ultimate goal, because we're never satisfied by it. The ultimate goal is to become satisfied and happy. And therefore Maharaja Shabde says, Nainan Deho Deha Bhajam Riloke Kastan Karman Arhate Vidyabhudyanye Tipo Divyam Putraka Yena Sattvam Shudyatas My Brahma Sokyam Tunantam. He's telling his 100 sons, my dear boys, Nanyam Deho Deha Bhajam Riloke. Don't be like a hog and dog, simply looking around to eat stool. Eat something to eat, whether it's a hog or a dog. They want to eat stool, or a human being may eat very nice food, supposedly. Don't be like that. Nanyam deho deha bhajam riloke kastan karman arhate vidvudyam ye. Simply for eating. Organize your life very nicely so you can eat very nicely. Tapo dibyam, perform divine austerity. Everyone is performing some kind of austerity. But do something for divine consciousness. Tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam. And in spiritual life, shudyat has my brahma sokhyam tananyam. So you can enjoy unlimited happiness that goes on forever. So the mind is searching for that. And unless it finds that, it just keeps on searching. There's no end to it. Therefore, in the table, Matirna Krishne Parataksatova Vitobi Padyeta Griha Ratanam Adanta Gobir Vishitam Tamizram Punak Punas Charvata Charvananam. Matir means Krishna, where if we put our minds on Krishna and Krishna consciousness, if we try to culture the mind, direct the mind, train the mind to be Krishna conscious, that's called Matirna Krishna. But people aren't interested in that. Most people aren't so far interested in trying. Either they don't know about it, or if they hear about it, they don't take it very seriously. Even our own devotees in our society don't take it that seriously sometimes. They don't have a program to cultivate Krishna consciousness every day as advised. Therefore, if we're not cultivating Krishna consciousness, what are we doing? Matirna Krishne Parataksatova Mitobi Padyeta Griha Vratana. What we're doing is simply trying to figure out how to solve our problems. What are our problems? We want to eat, sleep, mate, and defend. We're afraid it's going to be difficult. So we want to make all kinds of arrangements to make sure that will be possible in the future. And especially defense is important, because unless we can defend, then we can't eat, sleep, and mate. Unfortunately, no one, even the 15th level black belt can stop death. So therefore defense is always unsuccessful in the material world. But it's necessary temporarily at least. So either we're trying to make arrangements for eating, sleeping, mating, defending to solve our problem, fill the empty stomach, or we're trying to make arrangements so that we are not impeded in our eating, sleeping, mating, defending. And in other words, if we're not Krishna conscious, if our goal is not to become Krishna conscious, adanta gobhira vishutam tamizram, we're simply fulfilling the desires of the unrestricted, uncontrolled senses. Now we can't control our senses directly. We can only control our senses by taking shelter of Krishna and having him control the senses. Rishikesha, Rishikena, Sevya, Bhakti Uchite. So according to the strength of our desire to take shelter of Krishna, our determination to take shelter of Krishna, to that degree, Krishna will control our senses and have them utilized in Krishna's service. It's not by our own, simply our own will. We have to have a will to do it, but ultimately it's Krishna's will that manifests it through his energies. Therefore, Krishna says there has to be a certain amount of detachment, because if we have faith in sense gratification, then we're not going to be completely attached. It's like Draupadi. She had her Dushasan was trying to disrobe her, but she had one hand on her sari and one hand calling out for Krishna. But Dushasan was stronger than her, and therefore she was losing the battle. Similarly, if we have one mantra calling out for Krishna and the other one trying to figure out how to get out of the situation, then Krishna is not going to help us very much. Only when we surrender to Krishna. Therefore, our difficult situations are opportunities to strengthen our resolve to surrender to Krishna. So vairagya means to actually become convinced that if I take shelter of Krishna, then I don't need these things. But that takes experience. It depends what the object is and how much attached we are to it and how much our senses are pushing us to get that object. So, therefore, Krishna's solution to Arjuna's problem of an uncontrolled mind, Krishna says, Shri Bhagavan Vacha, Asamshayam Mahabaho Manodara Nigraham Chalam. It is actually very difficult to curb the restless mind. Krishna doesn't say, get serious, Arjuna. Chant Hare Krishna. No, he said it's difficult. He was sympathetic. It's very difficult to curb the... But it's possible by suitable practice. So the first thing is suitable practice. What is that suitable practice? Very simple, chant Hare Krishna. We're not trying to change the whole world by some kind of complicated process. You have to learn a certain handshake. You know, have to know a certain people. You have to know certain people. You have to pay a certain amount of money. No, simple chant Hare Krishna. That will change you. And if you change, then a little bit of the world changes too. So suitable practice, chant Hare Krishna, read Prabhupada's books, take prasadam. This is suitable practice. And there has to be some detachment, even while we're doing these practices. So when we're eating prasadam, we're actually honoring prasadam, and our mind isn't wandering to some idea of fearfulness that maybe I won't get something to eat next tomorrow or something. Detachment. Just have enough confidence I can focus my attention on what's going on right now. I don't have to worry about the future because I'm eternal. Yes, the atomic bomb may explode over Slovenia while we're taking prasadam, but it's all right, we'll come back and at least we'll get an opportunity to take more prasadam in our next lifetime. And it's even if we are in anxiety that the bomb's about to go off, it'll still go off anyhow. Our anxiety won't stop it. Therefore, some detachment, so that we're convinced, I should just focus in on what we're doing right now and not worry about what may happen 5 minutes from now or what happened 10 minutes ago. Just focus in on what we're doing. Not without consciousness, but knowing that this is what Krishna wants us to do, wants me to do, and do it with some devotion, with some art of focusing one's attention, giving one's love to Krishna. So here, this philosophy is meant to detach us from this body, the bodily concept of life that we're so attached to. We're making so many plans for it. And so many other people are making plans for it too. Our parents are making plans for us, and they claim we own a part of you because we gave birth to you. So you're coming from our flesh and blood, therefore you're obliged to us. Our friends are making want to have a piece of our activities. And ultimately, you know, other living entities at the time of death, as mentioned here, they'll also get a piece of us. We may have very nice hair when we, or very nice skin or whatever else we have when we leave this body. But actually the only ones who appreciate it are the worms or the animals that eat it. They don't put it on their Facebook. So for all the efforts we're making, ultimately the animals that have the final say or the fire or whatever else doesn't really care very much about. The fire will burn us whether we have nice, you know, we cut our hair on time or we didn't. It'll burn everything. Therefore, a certain amount of detachment so we can understand that ultimately this body doesn't belong to us. Of course, we understand higher than this, higher than this verse, it belongs to Krishna. And in the meantime, it should be utilized, before we have to leave it, it should be utilized in Krishna's service. And any other service that's going to be utilized is going to be a waste of time. But some detachment at first has to be there. It's not ours, so we question, who does it actually belong to? And therefore, by logic and reasoning, when if they have the proper association, they may come to the conclusion it belongs to Krishna. And therefore, be willing to utilize it in Krishna's service. And concentration on it without worrying whether Krishna is going to pay me back with enough so I can eat, sleep, mate, and defend. As one time Prabhupada told me when I was in the garden in Los Angeles with Karandabhru, who was in charge of Los Angeles at that time. And he was asking me some, he asked me a question. Srila Prabhupada asked me a question. He said, "Do you see the bird in the tree?" And I didn't see any bird in any tree. But anyhow, I said yes, because I didn't want to start arguing with Prabhupada. So he said, "That bird, he doesn't, he's not in anxiety." He said, "He knows he has his nest, he has his wife, he knows he'll get the worm tomorrow. So he's not in anxiety. Krishna is supplying everything for him. So why should you be in anxiety? Why should we think that if I concentrate my mind upon Krishna, Krishna is going to leave me there starving to death? That I have to make all the arrangements myself." In other words, faith in Krishna means that one concentrates one's mind upon Krishna, knowing what Krishna wants us to do. It's not that Krishna told Arjuna, just think about me and forget about everything else, forget about the fight, just sit there and meditate during the battle and I'll take care of the rest. No, meditation on Krishna means at the same time to find out what Krishna wants us to do. If we're actually in contact with Krishna, Krishna will tell us this is what he wants us to do with the body. And we have to agree to it so Krishna can use it as an instrument. It's not that we... So therefore Krishna says, Tasma sarveshu kaleshu mamanusmara yujacha Mayarpita manobudhira mame vaishetya samshaya. Therefore, Arjuna, you should carry out your prescribed duty of fighting with your mind fixed on me and everything engaged in me. You'll attain to me without doubt. In other words, Krishna wanted Arjuna to fight and at the same time think about him. So that's possible if we accept the philosophy and become detached, that all these things around us, they're all Krishna's, including my body. Even I belong to Krishna. And therefore, with the proper guidance, Guru Sadhu and Shastra, and the super soul of my heart, I can desire, I can dovetail my desires with Krishna's desires and utilize his body and mind and my words in his service. And the result is that I'll naturally think about Krishna. It's not that I have to necessarily do two things. I mean, thinking about Krishna is also nice. That's one of the nine processes of devotional service, smarana. But if I'm active, I'm doing things, I can also, if I'm doing them for Krishna, to please Krishna, then naturally I'll think about him also. And that will deepen my meditation. and Krishna will be happy to reveal himself to such a devotee. Or else one can only go so far, unless the idea is to please Krishna. Krishna will not reveal himself that much to a devotee who's not trying to please him. One may remember him like Kamsa remembered Krishna. But if we're doing things to please him, then he's much more likely to reveal himself to us. Therefore, one should understand, one should hear it about what this body is, so we don't become overly enamored with it or attached to its activities. In the future, people will glorify me for this or that. No one's going to remember us, for us, most of us. After we leave the body, they won't even remember who left the body. So we shouldn't be so much attached to what my glories are going to be, either in this lifetime or after I leave the body, because it won't make any difference. You may have had a Rolls Royce and then it got crashed and then you wind up with a bicycle. But who cares that you had a Rolls Royce before? Now you have a bicycle. They'll treat you like a bicycle, not like a Rolls Royce. So why should we be so attached to what we think is the glories of this car? It's going to get smashed pretty soon and we're going to have to get another one. It may not be so glorifiable, our next one. So why should we care about the old one? It's already, it'll be gone, like all the other ones we had. Conclusion is we should become more concerned with what we're doing for Krishna right now than anything else, without fear about the future and without lamenting about the past. Why should I do anything? The past was bad. So no. Or why shouldn't I be in anxiety? I got to make all the arrangements for this glorious future that has nothing to do with reality. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Hala Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.